Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA senior news analyst Andre Dineshnara. On this edition of the program, we'll examine the relationship between propaganda and aggression, particularly as it relates to Russia's actions in Ukraine. A researcher at the London School of Economics recently said, "The purpose of an information war is not to persuade someone of something so much as to get people engaged in warfare." By that definition, Russia has certainly been succeeding in its efforts to destabilize Ukraine. Our guest on this edition of the program is John Lynchowski. He's founder and president of the Institute of World Politics, an independent graduate school of national security and international affairs here in Washington. From 1983 to 1987, Lynchowski served as Director of European and Soviet Affairs at the National Security Council during the Reagan administration. And while the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, it appears that we're witnessing, under Russian President Vladimir Putin, a post-Cold War revival of the type of propaganda that reigned during the former Soviet Union, albeit a much more sophisticated version. Putin has stoked conflict and raised tensions to the breaking point in eastern Ukraine by waging a successful information war that depends on controlling the media. According to The Economist magazine, in the past 3 months, Russian propaganda has created a virtual reality to justify the annexation of Crimea and shape facts on the ground. Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine primarily depend on Russian-owned media outlets that portray a crude and false narrative of events. For example, state-controlled Russian media promoted the lie that a Western-sponsored fascist junta had seized power in Kiev and threatened Russian speakers. Crimea, an integral part of Ukraine since 1954, was saved by Russian-backed intervention and annexation. Of course, these false narratives have been buttressed by tens of thousands of Russian troops along Ukraine's border and by the infiltration of Russian special forces in eastern provinces, especially in Donetsk and Luhansk. But today's Russian propaganda, in contrast to the drab Soviet version, is slicker and more engaging. More importantly, for Vladimir Putin, it seems to be working. Most Russians in Russia and many Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine trust the state media and do not seem to be bothered by the distortions. Anti-Americanism and revisionist versions of events exploit the trauma left by the collapse of the Soviet Union, which was presented not as an act of liberation by its own people, but as a defeat imposed on Russia by the West. Well, in the run-up to the presidential election in Ukraine, we'll talk with John Lynchowski about the nature, impact, and implications of the information war that Russia has been waging at home and in Ukraine, as well as what, if anything, the United States and other Western democracies can do to combat it. John Lynchowski joins us here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Carol.
And as always, my colleague, Andre Dineshnara. Well, John Lynchowski, you wrote an interesting opinion editorial about this very topic in the Wall Street Journal recently, the relationship between propaganda and aggression, which we seem to be witnessing in Russia, particularly its actions in Ukraine. Talk about the scale, the extent of this warfare, so to speak, and how you see it impacting events.
What we've been seeing over the past couple of months in eastern Ukraine and nearby regions of Russia is actually a kind of an icing on a cake of a very long-standing effort by Russia to influence events in the so-called near-abroad countries, the former republics of the old Soviet Union, which Putin has been trying to re-amalgamate into a larger Russian political space. Russia has been involved in the intervention, kind of a subversion policy of political strategic influence. It has infiltrated agents of influence, most recently in a very bold fashion, obvious, these Spetsnaz troops, these agitators, the people who are helping to seize the government buildings in these provincial cities. But this is just the latest in a much larger wave, an ongoing wave of influence operations that the Russian intelligence services have been doing in these countries, partly to affect local elections, partly to influence local companies, sometimes buying up those companies. And there have been active efforts in many of these countries to try to foment inter-ethnic conflicts as part of a divide and conquer or divide and rule strategy. And so the overt information campaign, the propaganda campaign that's part of this, is in a way the crowning blow of this long-standing influence effort. So there have been perceptions management going on. What's very interesting is that the United States government used to track these types of influence operations and propaganda patterns, but because soft power is an element of statecraft that has been severely neglected, even in times of counterinsurgency warfare, interestingly enough, we don't collect much intelligence on these things. And insofar as we learn about active measures, and that is an old KGB jargon term that refers to disinformation, forgeries, and covert political influence operations. We used to collect information on this, now we don't. And insofar as we learn about it, it's when people like the Ukrainians themselves witness the Russians doing it and publicly charge them for doing it, but we are very largely ignorant about many of the details.
Perhaps not just ignorant, but also sort of at a loss as to how to combat that. I mean, yes, we're talking about Russia, which has capitalist system, but which is not a democracy, right, which controls information. The United States doesn't. But let me get Andre to weigh in.
It was interesting that you mentioned TV broadcasts. The first thing that usually is always taken in a revolution is, as you know, the television tower. And all the Spetsnaz guys basically took over that, and that's the way you can really broadcast to the homes directly the propaganda that you want the people to understand. I'm interested in your view, coming back to the annexation of Crimea. Isn't that something that Putin always wanted to have? Because he was always kind of talking about Ukraine, of course, as a little brother, which is one of the euphemisms that they use. But why did the West react so docilely to basically redrawing of the map of Europe?
Well, that's an entirely separate question. And I consider that our reaction has been an extremely weak one, because these actions that Russia has taken are just completely in violation of all of the norms of proper international behavior. There are ways of making these kinds of changes. There have been peaceful separations, such as between the Czech Republic and Slovakia, that were done through diplomatic negotiations and through the consent of the governed and all of this sort of thing. This was done in a criminal and thuggish and dishonest way. And if this is the new paradigm for international relations in this part of the world, some really radical re-examinations have to be done concerning how the United States and our allies in the region conduct our foreign policy. There are ways of doing this without having to kill people to do it.
Well, we have, in conjunction with the European allies, imposed sanctions on individual Russians and Ukrainians. Many now are pressing, especially if Russia does something to disrupt the upcoming Ukrainian election or doesn't pull back the troops, as it says it has on three different occasions, but no one has noticed any movement, that more sanctions will be warranted, perhaps on sectors. Mm-hmm. Would that be enough? And then the argument is that if the United States wants to move forward, we really can't do it in an effective way without Europe. And Europe, particularly Germany, is very, very reluctant to impose sanctions on Russia because they do a lot of business. And the gas, the importation of gas for Europe, they're dependent on Russia.
Yes. Well, you're exactly right, Carol. And there are constraints on how one does economic sanctions. I believe there are other options. First of all, I think that in order to prevent the monopoly control and the ultimately the victory of Russian propaganda in terms of shaping people's attitudes and the degree to which they buy into the notion that fascists are out to get them and that Russia is their rescuer, for example, in Crimea and eastern Ukraine, that we have to supply an alternative narrative. The Voice of America is a perfect instrument for doing this. Same with Radio Liberty. Each of these has a separate, discrete, and individually strategic mission to get an alternative narrative out there. I believe that it is extremely important that we shore up our allies in the region, that we simply tell truths. The truth is one of the most powerful weapons that we have. But it is a regrettable comment about the state of foreign policy thinking in our government these days that they do not understand, apparently, how important soft power is, how important information is, how important the truth is, and also how these vehicles can be used in order to put asymmetric pressure. For example, Putin himself, even though he happens to be very high in the polls, is claiming, at least ostensibly that's what they say, to have democratic legitimacy. Well, if one takes a good look at the elections and the entire method by which he has amassed and manipulated power with his crony capitalist system, with working with the oligarchs and the FSB and so on and so forth, he has very questionable legitimacy according to the genuine standards of democratic legitimacy. And these are things that can be pointed out. Ultimately, I believe that much of Putin's policy and this aggression has very much to do with the internal security of his own regime. When you are a not entirely legitimate ruler, you have an internal security problem. Mm-hmm. And you need to deal with that partly through the physical means of your domestic intelligence service, through various methods of repression, through control of the media, control of the economic means. And you have to try to induce your people into a certain psychological frame of mind. Well, you know, he could be facing all sorts of problems. He has a rising Islamic population. China is bringing its people into Siberia. And maybe they're going to want to have a referendum one of these days for their own self-determination. There are all kinds of potential weaknesses. And I believe a lot of what Putin's gambit is to demonstrate strength and that he can muscle everybody abroad in order to show his own people that attempts to change anything inside Russia are essentially futile, that they have to accept his status quo.
That may be true, but you may know this better than I, Andrei Dezhnev, and that is that there's still internally a movement who is very aware of these tactics, Navalny. There's much more cracking down on bloggers and other writers, and these people will not keep silent for...
No, but because they're seen, and they're seen as a threat. To follow your thinking, if Putin were secure, he would have these blossoming, if you
That's
will.
Correct. That's correct.
Right. And it'll be completely different. It's not going to be the old Ivan Grozny coming along with his opritchnina, with his secret police, right. But it's going to be somebody who says, okay, I'm supposed to be a Democrat. I am a Democrat. Let's open up the airwaves. Let's open up the blogosphere. And then he would really, I think, have the people behind us.
But he's doing the opposite.
He's doing absolutely the opposite. And these strong-arm tactics, especially in Crimea, always fomenting dissent in eastern Ukraine. But we talked about crony capitalism. Let's say the sanctions are ratcheted up and they're beginning to hit the oligarchs. Do you think that they can go to Putin and say, okay, enough is enough, and bring about some changes, or not really?
It's very difficult to say. I believe that Putin somehow has strength enough with whatever coalition. It's hard to say. I mean, this requires really, really good intelligence of the kind that is not manifested in the newspapers. And this is for the intelligence agencies to figure out, or at least extremely detailed open source analysis of these relationships, which I unfortunately have not been able to do. But it's possible that he may be slightly backing off a little bit, perhaps because there are influences on him, because some of this might be starting to hurt. There are so many imponderables here. We, for example, can try over time. Nothing can be done within 2 years' time to try to break Russia's, not monopoly, but a huge advantage in supplying energy to large parts of Europe. in 5 years, we could make a strategic difference along those lines. And by the way, speaking of information and influence operations, the Russians have had their agents operating in Europe in order to influence the environmental movement, in order to prevent the development of domestic energy sources within Germany, let's say. And so you have this green movement that just wants to have windmills. And when I have traveled in those regions, I've seen the windmills, and they're never turning because the wind never blows. And so, you know, this is all extremely pie-in-the-sky, dubious business, but energy is going to come from somewhere. We're all on the same planet, and why not develop it at home and have a security dimension to it?
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our guest is John Lenchofsky. He's former advisor during the Reagan administration, currently president of the Institute of World Politics. I'm Carol Castiel, along with senior VOA news analyst Andre Dinejnera. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA, and we love to hear from you. So please send your feedback to PCUSA@voanews.com. Tell us where you're from, and if you listen to PCUSA via the radio or internet. Here's a shout-out to loyal listener Olani Wasu Olatunji. He's based in the Ogun state of Nigeria. Well, now a question from Andre.
Coming back to the whole issue of oligarchs and capitalism, do you see the Russian society moving any way closer to more capitalism under Putin, or is it going to be far more, like what you're talking about, more of a stranglehold on everything?
Very interesting question. I actually had some high hopes that were not utopian hopes about the possibility that it might move in that direction, because relatively early on in his presidency, Putin implemented some very serious tax rate reductions, which were very pro-growth oriented policies. However, his whole power structure depends so heavily on the control of these major state-owned industries, you know, Gazprom and the others. And so I believe that so long as there is this, clinically speaking, more fascist model of economy that is going on in Russia, the notion of there being a burgeoning entrepreneurial sector with genuine economic growth, where those who have the best product at the lowest price have a level enough playing field to compete against some of the big guys, I think that that's much longer way off than I would have hoped would have been the case, you know, a few years ago when he implemented those pro-growth tax policies. But I think one of the biggest impediments to the realization of all of this is what some of us call post-communism. Post-communism is an ideology, it is a mentality, it is the reverberations and residue of the moral cultural Chernobyl that occurred amongst the peoples living in the Soviet Empire, that was perpetrated on them. And so what you have is still a mentality of, let's say, some subservience to authoritarianism, not quite fully fledged communist sort of demoralization, but there's a large amount of that. Look at the Ukrainian army. The Ukrainian army does not have incentive. They don't have patriotism. They're ready to sway with the breezes. Whoever's going to win, they'll go with their side. The necessary, healthy institutional development of a military organization has simply been absent, and it's integrally related to the mentality of post-communism.
Do you see that in other countries?
Yes.
You do?
Yes, elements of it are everywhere.
Are everywhere,
less so in the former satellites of East Central Europe, because there still is memory of what life was like under freedom.
Well, John Lenchofsky, speaking of Ukraine, we're seeing some pushback. We see the effect of the propaganda, the distortions of what's really going on. As Russia does step up these information campaigns, it has prompted some members of Congress, as you well know, to introduce a bill to even overhaul the Voice of America, the transmitter of this very program. In our case, listeners are certainly aware, I believe we are a government agency, But our charter requires that we provide objective, impartial news coverage to provide the facts. We are not a mouthpiece of the White House nor the Congress. But, of course, we do accentuate U.S. domestic and foreign policy. Mm-hmm. And I understand you support this legislation. Please explain its purpose and why you think it is needed.
Well, I believe that, and maybe I will take very slight exception with one of your remarks. The Voice of America is not, so to speak, a mouthpiece of the White House or the Congress, but it is the voice of the American government and the American people. And it serves as that voice in a multiplicity of capacities. One is by being the very essence and representation of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. We demonstrate to the world what a free press is like by the way we comport ourselves in our reporting and programming over the VOA. But the press also has editorials. The free press has editorials. The VOA can have its editorials. And those editorials have to be there to explain the logic of U.S. government policies. If we don't explain it, who's going to? Al Jazeera? Radio China? The CCTV? The Russian propaganda apparatus? Who's going to explain it?
Well, we do have editorials.
Yes, we do. Yes, yes. We do. But then let's also remember that news is a business which involves choosing what subjects to cover, what subjects to put on page one as opposed to page B20. And the voice has every right to be able to make those kinds of choices in ways that do not, never compromise telling the truth, never compromise the credibility of its mission, but which do end up being supportive of the foreign policy of the United States. Otherwise, you could just have CNN and let them do their international reporting or Fox or one of these other places. But the reason we have taxpayer supports this institution is that it does a multiplicity of things. And it isn't just news. I mean, the Voice of America does feature programming about what America is all about. We choose to tell about American agriculture, about American jazz, about American artwork, about American charitable activities. We report to the world so that people understand what is the warp and the weft of our country, what are our purposes in the world, what kind of people are we. And the VOA has supplied history to people who've been denied their history. When Václav Havel, the first president of post-communist Czechoslovakia, came to Washington, D.C. Did he go to the State Department to thank them for all of the arms control negotiations and all the summit meetings and all that? No. He came to the Voice of America to thank you people for keeping his national identity alive, the national flame alive, for 50 years. And you did this not by broadcasting propaganda, but by broadcasting the true history of his country and of the other countries that were under communist slavery, where the history was being revised for ideological purposes by the tyrannical regimes. So there are many, many functions. You know, the Dalai Lama has called the Voice of America the hope of Tibet. There's another leader from East Asia, I can't remember who it was, who said the Voice of America is the bread of our country. Well, you know, hope is a metaphysical virtue. Hope is not just the news. The news isn't just what gives hope. It's the entire picture. And what the Voice of America does is it reaches out to people. It connects with foreign audiences. The very fact that we broadcast to them says, we Americans care about you. We care about your human rights. We care about your dignity as an individual man or woman. And so we stand with you. Whatever your government is, we may be friends with it, we may have cool relations, but we care about you, the people. And this is a way of connecting. This isn't just news.
And John Linkovsky, before we close, we have very few minutes left. How do you think, then, can the Voice of America or other parts of the U.S. government combat the type of propaganda that is coming out of Russia? How can we possibly do that? Because of the money that they're putting in, the resources that dwarf what we're able to do, even if legislation is passed to bolster or buttress or increase the Voice of America's ability to broadcast the truth?
Well, it's a multi-stage process. In denied areas where they are denied a free press, one has to have people who will develop underground lines of communication to a free press. And that means to The Voice or Radio Liberty or one of the other great international broadcasters, BBC or something like that. And people will not have an incentive to get information to you about what's actually happening in Donetsk unless they know that they can reach a large audience. And if they hear the VOA signal coming in, one way or another, multimedia, shortwave, AM, FM, television, internet, every method, social media, if they know that there is an audience out there, that the signal is getting there, there will be increasing incentive of people in those denied areas to contact you and to get your reporters the information that they want to see broadcast in the face of the lies that they know are coming out. And so it's a multi-stage process. You have to have the signal, you have to have the reporters, and you have to have the strategic understanding of why this is so important in the first place to do it. And that's what's been missing. And at least the Congress, if this administration today doesn't understand it. And I don't single out specifically this administration. I think that this has been a systemic problem amongst executive different administrations in the post-Cold War era.
Indeed. Well, your article was entitled "The Voice of America Shouldn't Be a Whisper," and based on the many delivery systems, the transmitters that have been removed that have prevented us from getting the word out, I think that may be quite apt. But let's see what happens in the weeks and months ahead. John Linchofsky is a former advisor on Soviet affairs during the Reagan administration. Currently, he's the president of the Institute of World Politics here in Washington. John, thank you very much for coming in, sharing your insights with us.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
Press Conference USA on The Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Chiang Wong. And joining me on the program was senior VOA news analyst Andre Dinejnera. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, The Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to The Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.